You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom-targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. The subject of our podcast is a great new book, Brain Energy, by today's guest, Christopher Palmer. And you're going to be hearing a lot about this book because Dr. Palmer is going to do the circuit of the media as the book unrolls and comes out. And he's going to do a series of podcasts. We're very fortunate to have him on Intelligent Medicine to share his wisdom and breakthrough analysis of mental disorders, a unifying theory that knits together mental disorders, all of them, is his contention in Brain Energy. Okay, so from the starting point of, you know, before we get to potential solutions, you know, how is it that we undermine brain energy? What are some of the things to avoid that may negatively impact brain energy?
You know, it's one of the things that I love about this theory, because all of the things that I'm going to list are things that you already know, that everybody should already know in terms of risk factors for having mental illness. So certainly poor diet, a diet high in sugar, high in chemicals and other things can impair metabolism. We know that bad diets can cause obesity and diabetes. Well, guess what? They've also been linked with mental disorders too. Depression and anxiety are the most common mental disorders, so they've certainly been linked with that. But we have evidence, you know, for instance, linking trans fats, which are now banned. Everybody realizes now, you know, 30, 50 years later, that they're bad for us. But trans fats, it turns out, are also associated not with just with depression and anxiety, but also with Alzheimer's disease, with irritability, which can sometimes be diagnosed as mania, with other mental disorders and mental states. And so it's a good thing that those are banned. So diet is one, but poor sleep impairs our metabolism and our mitochondrial function. Drugs and alcohol, in particular marijuana, can impair mitochondrial function in brain cells, mm-hmm. and can actually result in, brain shrinkage, especially yep. in adolescents.
In a recent study, a shrinkage in gray matter in adolescents, which is particularly alarming because kids, 11, 12, 13, 14 are vaping THC.
Yeah, it's frightening. And I think, you know, because marijuana is being legalized throughout the country, a lot of people are getting the message that, well, it must be safe then. And that is a really unfortunate message. And I'm not necessarily here to talk about the legal implications of whether it should be legal or not, but I'm certainly here to talk about the health implications of whether it's good for your brain or not. And I think the science is pretty clear. Marijuana is not good for the human brain. It just isn't. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're seizing and you can't find anything else to stop your seizures, marijuana can stop seizures. Mm-hmm. It can also help people deal with nausea. It can help people deal with chronic pain. It can do some really useful things. And I actually get into the science of, well, if Chris Palmer is saying it's bad for you, then why would it do those beneficial things? I get into some of that detailed science about why. So if you have one of those conditions and you need something to stop your symptoms right away, that's great. It can effectively do those things. But at the end of the day, if you want to heal, if you want to actually get over that disorder, you're going to need some other strategies other than what is a nerve toxin or neurotoxin. But, you know, stress, there are psychological and social things that impair our mitochondrial function and our metabolism. Stress, adverse childhood events, trauma. We know those things play a role in mental illness. Well, guess what? We also know those things play a role in your metabolism.
Mm-hmm.
And people with those psychological and social adversities are also more likely to develop type 2 diabetes. They're also more likely to have cardiovascular disease. They're much more likely to die early death from heart attacks and stroke. So this is a way to start to connect the science, to connect the stuff that we have known for decades, but nobody's been able to put together. Nobody's been able to make sense of. The reason I'm so excited about it as a psychiatrist is because it leads to more effective ways to treat chronic serious mental disorders and help people fully recover.
And what about, you know, I think Sigmund Freud would be happy with what you're saying because you reconcile, the theory of deep psychoanalysis with its impact on metabolism. Literally, you can talk your metabolism into better functioning, and that makes sense. There's actually a circuit there. What about the role of inflammation? I think that that's been talked up a lot in the world of psychiatry, and there are such things as pro-inflammatory diets, anti-inflammatory diets, and then there's the role of chronic infections in promoting inflammation.
Yeah, and so there's no doubt that inflammation plays a role in both metabolic and mental disorders. The real answer is that inflammation gets tricky kind of fast. And so sometimes inflammation can start because of something in the environment causing the inflammation. So you mentioned an inflammatory diet. No question about it. Eating a lot of really bad junk food is inflammatory, and that can cause inflammation. And then that can go on to cause all sorts of problems. People can get an infection with a virus. COVID's going around, and a lot of people are thinking long COVID is a chronic infection with COVID, that maybe people aren't clearing the virus from their bodies. And so they have this chronic lingering inflammation, and that is causing a lot of the symptoms of long COVID, the brain symptoms, the brain fog, the depression, and in some rare cases, psychosis even. And we know that like kids who get infections are much more likely to develop mental disorders after that infection. We know that pregnant women, if they get an infection, they are more likely to have a child with a mental disorder or a neurodevelopmental disorder. So we know that infections are playing a role, and it probably is the inflammation from those infections that is playing a significant role in the consequences. But one of the challenges is that when people, sometimes something as simple as stress, something as simple as stress can cause inflammation. Mm-hmm. So we know that the stress response is actually much more than just cortisol. A lot of people know cortisol spikes with the stress response, and it does.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some other things that happen too. And one of those other things that happens with the stress response is that people get higher levels of inflammation. And those higher levels of inflammation can have adverse effects, not only on your physical health, but also your mental health. And sometimes when people are just metabolically compromised, for whatever reason, any of the reasons we've been talking about, or maybe they've been exposed to some kind of a metabolic toxin, some toxic substance in the environment.
Cadmium, mercury, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I kind of worry about all the microplastics going around.
Yep. Phthalates and so on.
All the hormone disruptors, endocrine disruptors, and all of those things.
EPH, et cetera.
I can't imagine those are good for our mitochondria metabolism either. But if you have that kind of a problem, metabolically compromised cells will cause inflammation on their own. And that is part of the body's healing process. So a metabolically compromised cell sends out a distress signal that, hey, I'm struggling here. I need some help. And part of that help is actually to send inflammation to that site of the body to try to help those cells heal and repair. So people are probably most familiar with this. If you get an injury, if you break a leg or sprain an ankle, what happens? It swells up. It swells up because of inflammation. And that inflammation is actually a good thing, ironically.
It helps with the resolution of
inflammation is bad.
Yeah, it's a repair mechanism.
But yeah, the inflammation is actually sending blood and oxygen and food and other kind of nutrients to that site to try to help those cells in that area of the body repair itself. But when somebody has chronic metabolic problems from diabetes or a bad diet or smoking cigarettes or something else, that their cells can become chronically metabolically impaired, and that can cause a chronic level of inflammation. And in those cases, it's really critical that we identify the problem, the root cause, you know, the smoking or the bad diet, and address it, because we've actually already spent probably billions of dollars on research looking at antioxidant or anti-inflammatory vitamins. Mm-hmm. And it was with good intention. I mean, all that research was with good intention. Researchers were thinking, well, maybe if we can decrease that inflammation, it'll help the problem. Turns out that it probably doesn't.
Yeah, you're not a big fan of the book is entitled Brain Energy, but it's not a book about taking coenzyme Q10 or, you know, NAD or something like that as a panacea. You do allude to the role that some B vitamins may play in brain energy. And in fact, there's a psychiatric medication, and you're familiar with it because you probably prescribe it, you know, reach for the prescription pad and prescribe Deplin, which is a metabolically active form of folate. A B vitamin, which is often given to patients with depression. But so it's not what you're saying is it's not a panacea to just reach for some energy enhancing vitamin or supplement. We have to address underlying causes, because it's kind of like spitting into a hurricane. The forces of inflammation may overwhelm the corrective benefits of whatever you're taking.
Absolutely. So there are definitely situations of vitamin deficiencies, our part one of our episode, the patient that you shared who was psychotic and, and started adding some protein and stuff, I almost wondered whether that patient might have been B12 deficient.
Absolutely.
In particular.
Iron,
B12 deficiency.
Yeah.
Yes, because a simple... You know, people who are vegetarian or vegan are at risk for B12 deficiency in particular, and iron and others, and other deficiencies that can all cause neurological or psychiatric symptoms. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right that overall, it's not that I'm against supplements, because I think supplements can be immensely helpful for some people. And certainly if somebody is deficient in vitamins or nutrients, we absolutely should identify that and try the supplement. But I don't think supplements are the panacea for most people, because we're not identifying the root cause. And, just an easy example. If you look at somebody who's in a hardcore extreme alcoholic, consuming, a quart of vodka every day.
Mm-hmm.
You can take all the
supplements.
Sounds
like someone of my patients at the VA hospital where I trained.
And it's not going to undo or mitigate the damage that all of that alcohol is doing. Mm-hmm. The treatment of choice is, let's stop the alcohol first.
Exactly.
See what we get. And then once we've done that, then that person may need help to heal. And then we may want to think about dietary strategy, exercise, and supplement support to try to restore health in that person, because they may have done a lot of damage with chronic alcohol use.
What about the role of the microbiome? It's kind of curious. And I note the case of a patient of mine who was suffering from you know, really severe GI ailments. It wasn't Clostridium difficile, for which it's indicated. You can get a fecal transplant for that condition. She didn't have that, so she had to go far afield to the UK, where they're offering fecal transplants for patients with, you know, outside that narrow indication where it's allowed in the United States. And she had a fecal transplant, and it cured her GI symptoms. And I saw her, and her countenance had completely changed. And she said to me, not only are my GI symptoms better, but I must have gotten a fecal transplant from a happy, undepressed person, because my mood is dramatically improved. So how does that fit into a unified theory of brain energy?
So, you know, again, there's no doubt that the microbiome plays a role in mental health, but again, it also plays a role in metabolic health. And we know that with certainty. The gut microbiome is playing a role in obesity, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease. And those are all, quote unquote, metabolic disorders. So the gut microbiome, you know, gets complicated quickly, because not only does it involve the food that we're eating and the, you know, and whatever happens to be in that food, including chemicals or any toxic substances. But the gut, you know, the gut microbes themselves process that food, and then they produce hormones and neurotransmitters and neuropeptides and all sorts of things that get absorbed into our bloodstream and can make it up to our brain. But then the, you know, the microbiome and the food that we're eating also affect the cells that actually line our gut. And those cells actually are endocrine cells unto themselves. So they're producing all sorts of hormones and, you know, even neurotransmitters and neuropeptides. And, you know, people can end up developing a leaky gut or inflammation of the gut. So it gets complicated very quickly, but the overarching theme is that the gut microbiome and everything happening in your gut ultimately is about metabolism. And that means it's ultimately about mitochondria. And so we know that a lot of these hormones and other chemicals that are being produced actually communicate directly with mitochondria. So it might be interesting to your listeners to understand that mitochondria were once bacteria, independent living bacteria. And it is very conceivable that they have maintained the ability to communicate with other bacteria, including the bacteria in our gut. And that the bacteria in our gut are communicating with them through signals. And some of the signals can be beneficial and helpful, but some of the signals may be hostile signals, you know, of bacteria competing with each other for food, and trying to outdo each other. But the bottom line is that we know the gut microbiome plays a role in all of the metabolic disorders, and it also appears to play a role in most mental disorders, all the way from depression and anxiety to schizophrenia to autism. So a wide range of mental disorders, we have pretty good evidence already that the gut microbiome is playing a role. And in my mind, that just lends further support to my overarching theory that mental disorders, all of them, all the way from depression, anxiety to schizophrenia to autism, all of them are in fact metabolic disorders of the brain.
Mm-hmm. But you're not a one-note Charlie when it comes to a ketogenic diet. That is a tool that you wield with a great deal of success with your patients. But in evaluating a patient, you want to use your unified theory to take a comprehensive inventory of potential insults to their metabolic intactness, their brain energy, and eliminate those, but also accentuate the things like exercise, for example, that may support brain energy.
Absolutely. So, you know, in many ways, this is about marrying traditional psychiatry with the integrative integrative field of medicine and, it really is about looking for root causes of illness. It's about saying that we really do need to think about root causes instead of just assigning a label and applying symptomatic treatment. And even when we can't identify specific root cause, there are healing strategies. I mean, fasting and fasting mimicking diet, which includes the ketogenic diet. I mean, that's really what the ketogenic diet is.
It sounds paradoxical. It sounds paradoxical because you're actually depriving the body of energy, but there's a process that occurs called autophagy, which you talk about in the book, which is very helpful to metabolic balance and health.
Yes. And, you know, there's something that fascinating and wonderful and also kind of almost humiliating for our field in this knowledge. And that is that healing professionals have known about the benefits of fasting for millennia. And in some ways, the work that I'm doing, I recognize that I'm taking all of this modern cutting edge neuroscience and metabolic science and mitochondrial science, genetics and epigenetics. We've mapped the human genome. We know so much. I'm taking all of that and putting it together and coming to the conclusion that, oh my gosh, fasting and fasting mimicking diets might really work. And it's kind of sad in a way that we're going back to 1,000-year-old treatment. But in another way, given that it can restore people's lives and reduce their suffering, it's miraculous in many ways.
Indeed. And, you know, so I really have to commend you because I found the book really inspiring. And it does precisely that. It knits together so much of what is termed traditional wisdom with modern neuroscience findings. And there are actually now objective metrics to see brain energy. You can actually visualize it. We have new modern techniques of CT, PET, MRIs, and so on that help to visualize energy patterns within the brain, whether certain parts of the brain are de-energized, other parts are malfunctioning. We can actually use that as kind of an objective metric of progress.
Absolutely. So, and, you know, so although this may sound like a stretch to some people, it, you know, most people have kind of are aware that for 30 plus years, we've been doing all of these brain scans on people with mental illness. Researchers have been studying this up and down. PET scans, PET scans, functional MRI, BOLD scans, all sorts of different scans. And each and every one of them is measuring brain metabolism. That's what they're all measuring. So in many ways, this is just confirming what we've already known all along, but it's putting it together in one coherent way so that we can come out with practical, actionable, healing treatment. And I think that's the most exciting part of it all.
Indeed. So it's a great read. I recommend it highly. Brain energy, the concept, mental disorders, all of them are metabolic disorders of the brain. Check out the book by today's guest, Christopher Palmer. And, I wish you much success in getting the word out. I know that you're going to be busy in the ensuing weeks as you do the circuit, of the various shows and through the media. And I hope that your messaging is very, very helpful to health professionals, as well as people who are in distress, which is unfortunately a high percentage of the population.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover intelligent medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.